table and questioning that, saying, I don't think these people actually understand where we're coming from, and challenging that, whether that's in the Philippines, here in the U.S., or any of the other 21 countries, economies that are meeting at APEC and making decisions on behalf of us. So when we talk about specifically the Philippines, that's how it's going to be directly impacting us. It's we're going to see more of this dependency for getting more and more imports from other countries to be more reliant on those imports, but also more export of all of our natural resources to these other countries as well, at the expense of our working class Filipinos. And what does that look like? Less jobs and more Filipinos being forced to migrate as well as a result of that, and which we see here in the States. We see so many Filipinos that have left home thinking there's to try to get better opportunities. So that's what we're seeing in how it's affecting the Philippines, not only in that way, but even how does it play in the larger realm of the U.S. and even China trying to fight over which economies, which countries that they want to work with to get more profit out of. And the Philippines will be in the direct impact of that as well, in that fight between these two imperialist countries, trying to figure out who can make the most profit out of the Philippines.
That was Carolyn and Joseph, two organizers at Buy in Oregon, a multi-sector alliance of Filipino organizations committed to the Filipino people's struggle for national liberation and democracy. You've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. We close today with sounds from the This Is What Democracy Looks Like about the 1999 WTO protests in Seattle. Thanks for listening.
I think in 10 years from now. The thing that's going to be written about Seattle. Is not what tear gas bomb went off on what street corner. But that the WTO in 1999. Was the birth. Of a global citizens movement.
For a democratic global economy.
Global economy, we lose our desire, our power, and our vision. In any part of the world, there are men and women who choose the path of least resistance, who accept lives of fear and isolation. But we will respond to death with life. We will respond to the nightmare with a dream. We will fight and imagine, create, and we will resist.
This is a special edition of the KBOO Evening News, the best of 2023. If you appreciate volunteer-produced news, music, culture, and more, consider supporting KBOO on this, the last week of our end-of-year campaign. Go online to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Back to the best of. KBOO reporter Owen Bastable was tracking Oregon Senate Bill 819 during the long legislative session earlier this year. Let's listen in to some of his reporting. You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. KBOO reporter Owen Bastable had the opportunity last Friday to talk with Democratic State Senator Sarah Gelser-Bluen about Senate Bill 819, which received unanimous approval from the Oregon Senate on March 2nd. Oregon SB 819 seeks to modify the abbreviated school day program requirements in Oregon's public schools. The abbreviated day program has impacted hundreds of students with disabilities who've been unlawfully sent home early or for extended periods of time without due process. It would require that parents or foster advocates give informed and written consent, and that schools must provide documentation for modifying a student's schedule. But according to Senator Gelser Bluin, the bill is far from getting approval in the Oregon House, where it has yet to go before it can reach the governor's desk for signature.
I am here with Sarah Gelser Bluin. Thank you so much for joining me, Sarah.
Thanks for having me back.
I wanted to have you back on KBOO News to talk a little bit more about Bill 819, bill that passed the Oregon Senate, and get a little bit more information on the status of this bill. Just to remind listeners, can you just give us a very quick synopsis of what Bill 819 is? And I know that you're the lead sponsor, so just in brief, what it will do if it's passed through the House.
Sure. So right now, across the state of Oregon, in many, many school districts, students are unlawfully denied the ability to go to school all day, and in some cases, even very much at all. Some kids are being limited to as little as 25 minutes a week of instruction online. These kids have not been removed for disciplinary purposes. They haven't had any due process. Their schools have just said that they can't serve them at school. And this is against the law. So what Senate Bill 819 would do is give the parents and the students an easy-to-use tool that would allow them to object to this illegal behavior and have it immediately remedied by ensuring that districts are required to return their kids to school within 5 days of their providing a written objection to the removal of education.
What are the possibilities that for this bill at this point? What are the different directions it may go from here?
I don't know. I continue to be mystified. I mean, we have been able to move a big package on semiconductors. We have moved a really important and challenging package around housing, where we've gotten that money out. But for some reason, this bill is just stuck, and I don't completely understand why. It's my understanding that the House is hosting a work group about the bill. I'm not invited to that work group, and I think it is predominantly composed of members of the kind of education establishment, school districts, VSDs, school boards, and the meetings are taking place in private. My understanding is that they are discussing amendments to the bill. I don't know what those amendments are because nobody has talked to me about them.
Do you have concerns that even with the passing of this bill that the Oregon Department of Ed may not be able or willing to implement this bill?
The department should not have any difficulty with the ability to implement the bill. I certainly hope they have the willingness to implement the bill. At the end of the day, the bill is very clear. It's really simple. The law currently says a district may not unilaterally place a student on an abbreviated school day program. So if there is not consent, there does not need to be an investigation. We can just presume that consent does not exist and that student is entitled to go to school.
At what point does it make sense, or does this happen where you would sit down with ODE leaders? Has that happened where people actually sit at the same table and work out some of the differences that may be not being discussed publicly? Or are there opportunities, I guess, to collaborate with your colleagues in ODE?
So, yes, I have worked very closely with ODE for years. And this guidance that they sent out to districts, it does not even mention to the districts that they cannot unilaterally place a student on an abbreviated school day. Their guidance doesn't even ask districts to tell parents that their students have a right to the same number of hours of education and instructional services as other children until after the placement has already been made. And this is a place where you watched that hearing. Families drove great distances and took great risks to tell their stories of what had happened to their children. Those are very personal, very difficult stories, and many of them were afraid to do it. They were afraid of retaliation.
name is Jane Guttrell, and I am from Douglas County. I am a mother to a 19-year-old son who experiences autism.
Our very bright, curious, and kind 9-year-old autistic child has been struggling in our local school district since kindergarten.
My name is Fawn. I'm a parent in the Junction City School District.
I'm Sarah Schultz. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and these are my twins, Keith in the brown hair and Lauren in the blonde hair. And they're not going to join me for the whole thing, but I just wanted you to know who I'm talking about. And
I have heard from school districts saying very ugly things about some of the parents that testified. And now there's a closed door meeting that these parents don't get to know what's happening. It's all about those kids. But all of the school people who did not take the time to testify at the hearing, they get to say things in private where they're not held accountable for them. The legislature has not kept the promise that we made to those kids that we would get them back to school after spring break, and they don't know why.
Did you predict that it would be harder to get this bill through the House?
I was absolutely stunned that it stopped. I think I pushed back really hard when I heard from some folks that there were concerns about timelines or the kids were really difficult. And to me, that doesn't make it okay to violate a kid's civil rights. And I'm also surprised by how offended people seem if I push back and say, hey, you know, if we say that we are rooted in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and we, again, don't make progress on allowing these kids to go to school who have been removed from school without any due process, it's hard to continue saying that that's what we believe in, because these kids are part of that too. And what we've seen through this pandemic is how pervasive discrimination is against people with disabilities and the tremendous structural challenges in our communities that are set up for people with disabilities to be successful. And I think the fact that we are having this big debate about kindergartners with disabilities being able to go to kindergarten for the same amount of time as their peers in 2023 is shocking to me.
However, you're not necessarily getting to hear the other side. At least it's not something publicly debated, from what I'm hearing you say in Salem, at least.
People have not said those things in public. What I've heard in private are things like, well, maybe they don't need to be there the whole time. What are they really going to get out of it? It's too expensive. Nobody wants to work with them. Those are the things that I heard offline prior to this happening. And what a lot of people say, and I think this is the most reasonable pushback to Senate Bill 819, and in this case, I think it's a both and, our workforce is inadequate. We don't have enough people, and they have not been given enough training. And I am working alongside those folks trying to fix that too. But just like with Senate Bill 819, what keeps coming back is no. And they both of those things have to happen. Neither can be contingent on the other. We are the legislature, and if we can change land use laws and prioritize semiconductors and do the right thing around housing and homelessness and renter protections, which are 100% the right things to do, but they're hard, we can figure out how to get elementary school kids with disabilities to school.
For folks listening, especially parents or caregivers impacted by this practice, and as you and others have cited, it's somewhere in the ballpark at minimum of 1-2% of students identified with special education needs. What would you recommend they do at this point?
They should write letters to all of their legislators. They should tell their stories. And if these parents could write to people and talk about their dreams for their kids' strengths, and what is being taken from these kids by losing not just days and weeks, but months and in many cases years of access to education.
Thank you so much for your time, Senator. I appreciate you following up with us, and we will keep tracking this story well. If folks need to get a hold of you, they can. I think they can just probably reach you on your website
through the State Senate. Yeah, just an email. If they Google my name in the Oregon State Senate, they will find an email for me.
Okay, that was Senator Sarah Gelzer-Bluen. We look forward to getting more updates on Senate Bill 819, which is currently pending passage through the Oregon House. Thanks so much for your time today, Senator.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Are tuned in to a special edition of the KBOO Evening News. It's the best of 2023. If you're enjoying this program, consider donating to KBOO during our end of year campaign. 80% of our funding comes from listeners like you. Become a member today by going online to kboo.fm/give, or you can text the word KBOO to 44321. Lastly, this evening, we'll revisit an interview of mine from June about how labels on food at the grocery store can be misleading. You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. Walking through the grocery aisle, people are often bombarded with labels like reduce sodium, lowers cholesterol, or only 100 calories per serving. It can make us think that we're making the right decisions when it comes to buying healthy foods. But sometimes these health messages are more marketing hype than straightforward nutrition guidance that are designed to sway a purchase decision. Manufacturers are able to manipulate these claims and the way that ingredients appear on nutrition labels in a way that still follows FDA guidelines, but makes it almost impossible for consumers to know what's really in their food. I spoke with Dr. Elizabeth Clotis, a Johns Hopkins-trained cardiologist and founder of Step One Foods, to learn more. Well, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. Now, some of your work involves addressing misleading food advertising when it comes to nutrition. What are some of the ways that you see this advertising mislead people?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've all seen this, right? Low in sodium, helps lower cholesterol, only 100 calories per serving. But what I would tell you is, as a cardiologist, all I treat all day long is high blood pressure and high cholesterol in people trying to lose weight who are eating these foods, right? I mean, this should tell you something. You know, the truth is that these health messages are more marketing hype than they are straightforward nutrition guidance. They're really designed to sway a purchase decision, which in a grocery store, you know, is given about 3 to 5 seconds, instead of actually providing any sort of guarantee of a health outcome. So one of my biggest rules is the more the item shouts about how good it is for you, the more skeptical you should become.
Well, you mentioned a couple of those kind of shouting things from the food packaging that you might see, but are there other examples of misleading statements on food packaging that people might see?
Well, you know, for example, something like reduced sodium. So what does that mean? It means that this particular version of the product contains 25% less sodium than the original item, okay? Well, if the original item had 1,000 milligrams of sodium per serving, you know, 750 milligrams is not that different when you put it in context, which is we should be consuming under 2,300 milligrams of sodium per day. So that's actually not that much of a difference, right? You haven't really, you know, solved much of a sodium challenge. And we're surrounded by sodium, sugar, and fat in our food environment. It makes it really, really hard to eat correctly.
How does regulation play in? Doesn't the FDA regulate what advertisers can promise?
Yes, but it's interesting how, you know, food manufacturers get around these regulations. They are truly meant to help. So they are very well-meaning, but you can play with the rules, right? Rules are meant to be broken and loopholes exist. So for example, a bar may say it's high in fiber, and it's correct, and it can be high in soluble fiber, and the data says that if you eat a certain amount of, you know, soluble fiber, you know, 3 grams per day, you can start to see an impact on your cholesterol. Okay, so a food is high in soluble fiber. It has a heart on it, and it will say eating this food, you know, contributes to soluble fiber intake. Great. But the small print says you have to eat 4 bowls of this cereal to get the amount of the soluble fiber that gets you to that cholesterol-lowering goal. Or you have a high fiber, let's say it has 3 or even 5 grams of soluble fiber in a bar. But then you look at the ingredient list and you go, well, wait a second, but this also lists various types of sugars 6 times. It has trans fats in it with hydrogenated vegetable oil, right, as one of the ingredients. And, you know, and the nutrient of interest, which carries the blessing of the FDA, is delivered in a vehicle that is counterproductive to health, and that's not taken into account. And this is where it can get really, really confusing.
What do you recommend for how folks might start to tackle becoming a better food shopper in light of all these things?
Yeah, so I think one of the things I would say is always read the ingredient panel, right? The fine print. We were told to read the fine print before we sign a contract. Well, read the fine print on food packaging. And look, this isn't realistic for us to do on every single product every single time we're shopping. You may need to, like, you know, kind of divide this into chunks in terms of what's reasonable and how much time you have. But maybe even when you get home, look at the ingredient panel. What's in there? And if it sounds like it came from a chemistry book, probably the less of it you should have. You know, yes, some of the ingredients can be fortifications and vitamins can sound like chemicals, but foods that need a lot of fortification are foods made from ingredients that are devoid of those nutrients to begin with. So, you know, if you add a lot of vitamins to a sugary breakfast cereal, it doesn't make it good for you. So look at the ingredient panel, take a look and see what's actually in your food. And then the other thing that I would say is, you know, we've also been, it's been ingrained in our heads to look at the nutrition panel, look at the nutrition facts panel, but understand that that doesn't give you all the facts. It hides some important information and tells you nothing about where the nutrients are coming from. Right? So, for example, people often, I saw people that are very, you know, concerned about sugar content. And yes, we shouldn't eat too much sugar, but part of that depends upon where the sugar comes from, right? You know, sugar in an apple acts very differently in our system than sugar from gummy bears. And yet, if you were to create a nutrition panel for an apple and 8 gummy bears, they would look almost identical. And so, you know, there's more to food than what we break it down into in terms of macronutrients that end up on a nutrition facts panel. Again, go back to the ingredient panel, right? It's like that's where the real information is. Finally, I think this is a really important point. The healthiest foods in a grocery store have no claims, ingredient lists, or nutritional panels on their packaging, right? It's all the fresh fruits and vegetables, herbs, leafy greens found in the produce aisle. So what I would say is make sure that at least, you know, your grocery cart always contains at least some of these items. The more the better. You know, they're full of fiber, they're low in calories, they have lots of antioxidants, vitamins, and various micronutrients that are vital for health. And, you know, if you're trying to impact heart health specifically, they're also naturally sodium-free and cholesterol-free.
One of the questions that I have about this is a little bit personal, because I've known people in my life who, you know, want to have better nutrition and want to understand more of, you know, the nutrition panel and what the ingredients mean. Do you have a sense of how to create balance in that? Because I guess my anecdote is that I've noticed that people can feel sort of extreme, or like even if they accidentally brought it home, then that's really bad and they can never eat it, or it's nothing can be trusted at the grocery store. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I don't mean to create paranoia, right? Like this isn't about throwing out the baby boot with the bathwater. It is about though being a more maybe wary shopper, right? And I think part of the problem is we have made nutrition so confusing, right? Like, eat grapefruit, don't eat grapefruit, eggs are fine. Oh my God, you ate an egg. What were you thinking? Good. Oh no, you must be a vegan, right? Like, it's just all this conflicting stuff. And in some ways, it's kind of ridiculous, right? We are the only mammal or only animal on this planet that doesn't know what to eat, right? Like, that's kind of crazy. And I go back to sort of a more realistic approach to all of this, and there is one piece of dietary advice in terms of what we should eat that I think is brilliant. And it doesn't come from me. It comes from Michael Pollan, who's an author, and he's written several books on food. And one of his books is called In Defense of Food, and it has a subtitle. And the subtitle is How We Should Eat. And the subtitle is 7 words long, and it says, eat food, meaning eat real food, food that your great-grandmother would recognize as food. She wouldn't recognize, 80% of what's in a grocery store, right? If we said chicken, she would say, like, oh, chicken breast. She wouldn't think chicken nuggets, right? Eat food, not too much. Don't stuff yourself, right? The Japanese have a wonderful saying, hara hachi bu, which is, push away from the table when you're 80% full, not 100% full, right? Meet the sort of the requirement of quelling hunger as opposed to stuffing yourself. And the last is mostly plants. If your diet is primarily plant forward or contains a lot of whole real plants, which includes beans and legumes, leafy greens, fruits, vegetables, grains, but in their most whole and unprocessed forms, nuts and seeds, you're going to do fine. So eat food, not too much, mostly plants. That's it. And if you follow that advice as you're walking through the grocery store, you'll be fine.
Thank you for that explanation. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Just as a society in general, we sort of hand over ourselves to drugs and procedures. And again, these have a role. But we also have so much control over our own health. And we have the power to do a lot of the healing ourselves. It's not, necessarily always simple, but it's there. And the fact that we don't use it more is unfortunate, because we can really help ourselves. We can reduce the amount of medications we need. We can avoid some procedures. We can live longer, better. And ultimately, that's what this is all about. I'm grateful to have been on. This is a very important topic. I hope people, start looking at those call outs on all those boxes and be a little bit more skeptical, because if everything is so good for us, why are we all so sick?
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
That was Dr. Elizabeth Clotis, a cardiologist and founder of Step One Food, speaking with me about misleading food labeling. You've been listening to a special edition of the KBOO Evening News, the best of 2023. In this past hour, we've been taking a look back at some of the best stories from our volunteer reporters in the past year. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we really can't do it without your help. Consider donating to KBOO during this, the last week of our end-of-year campaign. kboo.fm/give is the website to donate, but you can also text the word KBOO to 44321. A big thank you to all the volunteer reporters who contributed to the newscast this year. Thank you to all the KBOO members and donors who have supported us this year, and thank you for listening. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings. We'll be right back.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Help! I need somebody. Help! Not just anybody.